Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. If this is your first time, please make yourself at home as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will address a variety of issues, such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, lasting health, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, you all can do me a big favor. So please check out one of our past shows at answersforthefamily.com to hear some informative and entertaining guests, as well as some dynamic co-hosts, discuss ways for you and your loved ones to become happier, healthier, and more at peace. Now, I'm also looking for some show ambassadors who will forward at least one of our shows to your social media group or to someone you know that can benefit from a particular subject. I want you to know that I truly appreciate it, and this is just another way that we, together, can make a positive difference in the lives of others. And I can tell you that after you listen to this show, you're going to see that this is something that we can all benefit from, so you're all going to know somebody that you can send this to. Now, with me, as usual, is our ambassador to kindness. She is our kindness expert that is traveling around the world. She is taking 2 years to spread the word of kindness as she continues along the journey that she calls the Dare to Be Kind movement, and that is Gabriella Von Rey.
Hi, Alan. It's really nice to be back because last week I couldn't be on the show due to a funeral in Europe. But I was very, very happy to set foot back in the USA after 6 weeks of absence.
Well, now you say that you're back in the USA. The question that everybody is wondering is, where in the world is Gabriella?
I am in Iowa.
You're in Iowa.
For the Quad Cities.
Okay.
And I am lucky enough that I have a very kind, she always says that she's nice, manager who has welcomed me with open arms to rest from my tiring jet lag and few weeks in Europe taking care of people, family members that were ill and, yeah, that needed help and kindness.
Well, share with us a little bit, for those that haven't heard, share with us a little bit about the Dare to Be Kind movement and what people can do to get involved.
Okay. Well, I always like to say something that has to do with your speaker that is going to speak right after me. And I saw that the topic title of today was Surviving to Thriving. And I love that, by the way, Peter. So I think that you can really say that the Dare to Be Kind movement is born out of everything that we see around us, all these social issues, all this complaining. We see that, you know, we have lost etiquette. We want to do it, but we don't always know why. And this is why we say dare to be kind. The daring is really saying how, you know, to be kind and hold the door open for someone. Most of us will do that naturally without being pushed to do that. Whereas what we're talking about in the kindness is going that one step beyond, right, Alan? Mm-hmm. Like you and I are doing, and many people on your show, and Elena, your co-host, is doing too, by being the difference. But the daring part is saying, hey, instead of just going through your day, we are going to look, really look around us, put the cell phones down, look around you and say, is there anyone today in my vicinity of 2 mile radius that I could help? A stranger, maybe someone I know, maybe it could be a coworker, but something that I can do. And I always know the answer is yes. And I think this is the same thing as just the difference with being nice and being kind. You go that one step beyond. Does that make sense, Alan?
It makes perfect sense. And that's why we love having you on the show. And again, I want everybody to really take this in and think about the fact Gabriella has left her home and decided for 2 years to travel around to bring kindness to all of us. This is something that we all need to build upon. You know, we have a great opportunity to change the direction in which things are going. You know, we can all just look at television and stuff and see that there's a real motivation out there to try to push negative agendas and such, or to try to be divisive in some way. This is just the opposite. So, again, you know, I couldn't be happier about what it is that you're doing. And I think that we can all take this. And as you said, it's a beautiful thing. It's a challenge to go do something within 2 miles of yourself. Do an act of kindness. It's so beautiful. Yeah.
And it's really possible. Like, even, you know, I've spent most of my time for the last 3 weeks in a hospital. And even there, you know, everywhere where you look, there are people that need a kind word. There are people that need a hug. You know, I smiled at someone in the elevator, for example, and just because they looked so sad. And I thought, let me give them a smile. And the person actually smiled back and said, may I hug you? And I said, you may. And, you know, yes, in the hospital, we know that people go and visit and hear terrible news. So it's maybe a little bit more expected. But think of the elevator, you know, where you go to work every day, the elevator where you have your show, Alan. I'm not saying that you have to hug everyone, Alan, if you don't want to.
That's okay. I'm a hugger, so that's good.
Okay. But I'm thinking of, you know, you have that awkward silence, and maybe we can break through it by saying, how is your day going today? And really looking at that person while doing it. And I think they would be very, very receptive to that. So let's give it a shot.
Okay. Now, share with everybody how they can get to the website or to the Facebook page, so that they can not only go do those acts, but they can share them with the rest of us so that we know where this is happening and they can be part of a community to where they can see what other people are doing.
Absolutely. So the daretobekindmovement.com is our website. And when you go there or you type it in all of the social medias, we have groups. We really try to share what's going on with other people. We try to be vulnerable in our stories by engaging and telling people that through our vulnerability, we are actually helping someone else. So again, I think your guest is a perfect guest for this topic of kindness, because thriving is what we need to do every single day, and it's a choice. So if you have an awesome story, please feel free to contact us. Don't be scared. If you don't dare to write it, you can do it on audio, video, any way you want. Call us. We are always available, and we do bookings. So please come for my talks.
I love it.
Click on our website and say, I'm in. I'm a kindness instigator. That's all you have to do.
A kindness instigator. I love it.
Yep.
So, well,
let's instigate kindness. So I know that I'm leaving your show, but I'm going to listen to it, and I will definitely share this on my social media, because surviving to thriving is really important. And I wish you really well with Elena.
All right. Well, Gabrielle, again, thank you so much. And yes, that is correct. My guest co-host today is Elena Jo Chatterley. Yeah. And she is also someone that falls into this category of somebody who is making great opportunities for people to grow as human beings, to become better family members and do so many wonderful things. And a little bit about her, you know, she's a therapist who's been working with teens and their families for over 15 years in the Heritage Community, which is one of the nation's leading adolescent residential treatment programs. And I want to share the fact that, you know, I feel a little bit I can take a little bit of the credit, maybe a tiny little bit, but I know that after being on this show in the past, you know, I told Elena that she was just a natural at this, you know, the idea of being on a podcast and sharing with other people. Well, I'm happy to say now that I think she's 3 weeks in, Elena has gathered all of her years of experience, and she's put it into her own new podcast called The Big Picture Relationships. Where she shares real-life wisdom through stories and practical advice as a therapist and also as a parent. Now, you can see her work at www.elenajoe.co or by finding Big Picture Relationships in any podcast provider. Her most recent project is a free downloadable outline for the new drug talk that you need to have. So, Elena, share with us a little bit about the new talk and where they can find it.
Thanks so much, Alan. After working with teens and their families for 15 years, I've really seen this evolution of the drug epidemic. I've watched it grow, the availability of substances to our children, and even the recreational legality of many of them and age limits don't defer our teens, I'll tell you that much. Mm-hmm. So I really put together a downloadable that you guys can get at the link. I'll tell you in a minute about that. And really, I think that this is the information age. These kids can get all the information they need from their friends, from the internet. And so we as parents should be the number one source of information.
Yep.
And I think there's four things they need to know that we didn't learn as kids growing up, that drugs are actually kind of awesome. There's a reason that people throw their lives away for them, that, you know, seek after them, lose jobs there. And if we tell our kids that they're just evil and bad, and then they hear from their friends how awesome they are, we've lost our source of credibility.
Yep.
So in addition to, you know, teaching our kids that they're awesome, we need to teach them what they do to biology, what addiction is, what that does to the body, and how that interferes in their social skill development, their emotion regulation. And so really the first four points that this pamphlet that I have covers is what our kids need to know. And then the last three are in a way that we have to address as parents, how to actually teach our kids.
Right.
And having one big sit down or the annual drug talk is not enough. This is something that from a young age we should be talking about pretty regularly, owning up to, explaining these things and taking away some of the taboo. Like, you know, we're all intrigued by things that are forbidden. So you take away some of that intrigue, so that it becomes a normal everyday thing to them, and also show respect for the fact that they could make their own choices when they're a grown-up,
mm-hmm.
and that gives them some sense of responsibility to actually make the right choice. You know, it's like if I give you $17 to go spend, you could buy candy and whatever, but if it's your own $17 you worked really hard for, you're probably going to spend it a little bit differently. Same thing. We need to teach our kids that same sort of responsibility. Anyway, I could go on and on, but there is a whole download that you could get at that website, elenajoe.co, or I also made a simple link to find it at bit.ly/newdrugtalk. Go download it. It's free. Share it. Let's teach these kids differently and reverse this drug epidemic by having kids who understand.
Well, and for everybody out there, I mean, I really suggest that you go to the website and check it out. There is a lot of great information. You know, there is this particular download, but there's so much other really great positive information that really helps in different, it's different ideas on ways to talk to your children at different ages. You know, that this might be a better talk at this age, or this might be a better talk at that age. So there's so many things I think that is of value. So I really suggest that you check it out. And before we bring on our guest, I thought it'd be interesting. I want to ask you one of the same questions that your own 7-year-old asked you. What superhero power would you have?
Oh boy, a fabulous introduction. What's funny is the first 30 years of my life, I would have said the ability to freeze time. And that shows you kind of what a control freak I was. So I'm really excited to hear from Peter today and how he reversed maybe some of that. But now I decided, you know, the Midas touch, there's something to that. If I had the ability to make everything I touched, every person I talked to better, not real gold, but, you know, turn around moods, turn around situations, I just think that would be a really meaningful superpower. Maybe it doesn't sound super cool like flying, like my 7-year-old wants to fly, But if I could make everything I touched better, I mm-hmm. would love that.
And you know, actually, that it reminded me of something when one of my sons, we were flying to Florida, and I want to say that he was probably 4 years old at the time. And so we're getting on the plane, and as you go in, and you're supposed to turn right, and he turned left, and he went and sat in the pilot's chair.
Mm-hmm.
And I was horrified. Oh my God, we're going to get kicked off the plane. Mm-hmm. He's going to fiddle with different knobs and stuff. So I turn around and I run up there thinking that we're in trouble. And the pilot is, a co-pilot is actually next to him. And he's talking to him like he's the pilot. And it's just having this great conversation.
Oh, wow.
And stuff. And so, and the pilot gave him little wings that he could pin on his shirt and stuff and said, you know, this is great. You know, now we need you to go back there so that the other mm-hmm. pilot can come in. Mm-hmm. But they handled it so well. I thought it was so great. So we go back and we sit in our own chair and I sit next to him and I go, so does this mean you want to grow up? Oh, I'm sorry. So he says to the co-pilot, he goes, you know, this is great. He goes, I think when I grow up, I'm going to fly. Like that. I went, oh, great. So we went and sat down. I said, so when you grow up, you want to be a pilot? He goes, no, Dad, I still want to be Spider-Man. I'm just going to fly, you know. So, yes. The different superpowers that all of us could have can be different at different ages. So let's talk a little bit about our topic today, which again is going from surviving to thriving, and how mindfulness, and it is interesting how our guest put this, but how mindfulness saved a recovering jerk. So our guest, Peter Callahan, says that he loves to work with leaders, students, and entrepreneurs, and together practice looking inside to discover the act on their values, meaningfully connecting with others, and finding fulfillment in their work and their lives. Peter holds certificates as a professional coach through the Institute of Professional Excellence in Coaching and the International Coach Federation. He has completed mindfulness teacher training through UMass Medical School and various mindful schools. He has a degree in entrepreneurship and business management from the University of Rhode Island. He's managed and worked with Fortune 500 companies and small businesses alike throughout the country. Peter has served on the board of the International Coach Federation, is a founding board member of the Entrepreneurial Center of Northwest Connecticut, and is past president of the Litchfield Chapter of Business Network International. He is also the Northwest Connecticut 40 Under 40 Award winner. So Peter lives in Connecticut with his wife, Mackenzie. He's an avid skier, hiker, and reader. He also loves to travel and volunteer throughout his community. Peter, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you, Elena, as well. It's great to hear from you too. Some of your stories, and Gabriella, she's not here, but yeah, love what you're offering out to the world.
Well,
incredible stuff.
Again, it is my pleasure, and I was talking with someone recently, and I just said I look at this as such an incredible blessing that each week I get to talk with and learn from so many incredible people like yourself that are out there making a positive difference in the world. So thank you for taking the time to be with us. As I said in the initial part about the interesting description that you put in regards to this, so share with us a little bit about what started you on this journey.
Yeah, of course. I just believe we've all had experiences that have led us to where we are, so it's interesting trying to determine which are the most pivotal versus others, but you know, I do my best. And the theme of vulnerability that came up earlier, I think it is really sort of the key to what happened to me. So as, and I know we're speaking to many families as well, so I just want to start with, you know, just having a challenging adolescence with, you know, divorce and loss in the families and these things that a lot of us, you know, encounter in life, and just that sense of not having any idea what to do with all these emotions and different messages from society I was getting. I was kind of a sensitive kid and loved to be open and listen to folks, but was kind of told by males in my life that I need to toughen up and stop being such a sissy, I'll use. And yeah, I think that messaging had a really strong effect on me and really hardened me. I'd like to say that I feel like through high school and college, I sort of put on a suit of armor, just sort of protecting myself and really making sure that I was perceived as the ideal image of what a man is supposed to be, and just wound up building up a lot of arrogance in the place of what I would hope would have been confidence. And so eventually, there was one night in college when a friend sort of just turned to me, you know, after we were making some comments about some people walking by, and said, "Wow, Pete, you're really an a-hole." And I'd been called this many times. This wasn't the first time, but the way this friend said it to me was with kindness and compassion, without trying to put me down necessarily, just kind of honesty, and I heard it. I was finally able to say, "Oh, wow, you're right. I just thought people couldn't handle how awesome I was, but turns out I'm really just kind of a jerk to people." And so that was a huge moment for me of just recognition, just awareness. Okay, so this is part of what I've got going on. Now, I had no idea what to do with that information. Well, that sucks. If I've been told I am who I am, our brains don't change, so I guess I'm kind of stuck being this person. Well, that's a bummer. But it was kind of the first time I had awareness of it. So fast forward a couple of years, I'm out of college, actually in like a sales job, driving around in a truck all day, and I decide, you know, I think I'm going to try and learn something instead of just listening to the music or sports radio all day, and picked out an audio book called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Stephen Covey.
Yes, have read it.
It's a classic.
Yes.
1989, I think, right? It was a big year when that came out.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts talking about everything is a choice and there's nothing you have to do, and kind of rolling my eyes as I drive around, like, okay, I've got bills to pay and things to take care of. Sure, everything's a choice. That sounds great. But as he starts to describe, and really what Stephen Covey quoted was Viktor Frankl.
Mm-hmm.
You may have heard of Man's Search for Meaning, great book out there, but he was an Auschwitz survivor in the Holocaust, and one of his big awakenings during his 4 years in a concentration camp was he recognized that between stimulus and response, is the way he says it, think of it as what happens to us and how we react to what happens to us, there's a space. Between stimulus and response, there's a space, and in that space lies our freedom to choose our response.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of paraphrased, but I read that, listened to it, I remember pulling the car over to the side of the road and it just kind of washing over to me, recognizing that between what happens to me and how I react, hopefully respond to what happens, there is some choice, there's some space. And then somebody cut me off in my truck and I wound up flicking them off right away. And there's not a lot of space right there. That's one of those moments where I have some work to do. But that's what helped me recognize, wow, maybe I don't have to be a jerk if I can figure out how to exercise that space.
Okay.
So I can keep going. I just want to leave a little space for questions or if there's anything in there.
I love that introduction. So I guess continue the story then. What happened? What did you find to start trying to change up these habits and behaviors?
Right. Well, yeah. So I finally started reading. I figured now that I've graduated from college, I might as well actually start to learn a little bit. Not to put down my education that much, but I really, what I was finding is, wow, I didn't learn a lot of these things that really are practically helpful in the business world, in life, whatever it might be. I was raised by two therapists, two psychologists, so I got some of that education, but still not as much as I might want. So I just started reading, like, voraciously, just tearing apart as many books as I could, and audiobooks helped me a lot. I don't make as much time for reading physical books. So I do other things, but I'm in the car a lot, so the audio really helped, and I just started reading book after book by all these authors out there, you know, started really practical with, like, Stephen Covey, but then something, you know, got a little bit more spiritual, got into some things, you know, Eckhart Tolle, and eventually found my way to Jon Kabat-Zinn, who is actually the founder of the UMass Medical Center's Center for Mindfulness. So he started that 40 years ago this year, actually, 1979. Mm. And I'd heard mindfulness referenced in so many of these books, but until I kind of really read a book describing it, I thought I was going to have to stop my thoughts and having trouble sleeping. And what I didn't realize was the anxiety that I have, all these worries about what could happen, what's in the future. I need to plan for everything and sort of this type A, make sure I'm on top of everything, kind of what you referenced earlier, that desire for control. So it's like, oh, this mindfulness thing's never going to work. But it's what every book really said is sort of the foundation of changing behavior. Doing something a little differently than the way we have it. I like there's a quote from Thomas Jefferson that says, if you want something you've never had, you must be willing to do something you've never done.
Exactly.
Mm. Okay. Well, let me try sitting on this chair and watching my breath for 5 minutes and see if I'll give it a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I really found this way to start to exercise that space between what happens to me and how I respond, is just this attention training practice of just, all right, you pick one area to focus your attention on. We can talk a little bit more about this, but it's fascinatingly simple. And neuroscience and all the research that's out there that Jon Kabat-Zinn and the UMass mindfulness-based stress reduction, the 8-week class that he created, that all these research studies have come out around mindfulness now that have just shown how effective it can be in basically growing our brain, right? Our prefrontal cortex actually increases gray matter and allows us to be in a little bit more control, at least, depending on the moment. Right? I still have trouble with the road rage, but other times, you know, I feel like I'm pretty zen now. So it just depends on the situation. But
Right. Well,
I really have been able to change my relationship to other people. It's kind of the ultimate factor for me.
Yeah. For so many years, science thought that brains were, you know, they didn't develop anymore past young adulthood, late teens, but that's definitely
right. Changed.
So there you are. Mindfulness, like you're talking about, is rewiring the brain.
Exactly. Yeah. It's only been the last 15 years or so.
Yeah. And there was a study that I just read where they had 25-year-olds, and then they had 50-year-olds, and then they had 50-year-olds who had practiced mindfulness. And they said that the 50-year-olds who had practiced mindfulness, that their brain was much closer to the 25-year-olds than the 50-year-olds that had not practiced mindfulness.
Wow.
So for anybody out there, if you need motivation, think about that for a moment.
Exactly.
So, you know, actually, before we go to the next question, for anybody out there that is listening, if you know anyone who is a politician, text them now and tell them that they need to be listening to this. Okay. So, or send it to them afterwards, so that they can understand that that this is a way to start moving forward in a positive way. So now I know that you have shifted quite a bit, Peter, in regards to, you know, being focused more on leadership, which I think is great, because if we can get leaders to understand the mindfulness, there are going to be people that follow them. So I love the fact that I think that's how you're going to get the word out to even more. But, you know, at what point did you realize that you're going to focus on this? And especially because, I mean, most people don't immediately identify as a leader. So share with us how you got to that point to make that your focus.
Yeah, absolutely, Alan. That's a great point. I think the word leader can sometimes be intimidating or doesn't resonate with many of us if we don't think, well, no one reports to me at work. You know, I just do my own thing. Or I actually really like to define the word leadership more as like the word leading, a little bit more open. I often think of leadership as any action we take, we are showing ourselves what's important to us, because what we're doing is whatever we've decided is most important in this moment. So we're leading and setting an example for ourselves, and then we're showing those around us what's important to us as well, and what we care about and what matters. So to me, it's any action we're taking. So we're all leading. The question becomes, are we doing it consciously or on autopilot? Is it just, are we doing whatever we've been emotionally patterned through life, or you know, these behaviors that we're not completely conscious of, or we think, like I used to, like, well, if someone makes fun of me, I have to say something back to them, right? That's just what I need to do. I need to stand up for myself. I deserve that, as, you know, sort of justifying it. And so I've gotten to watch these stories in my head and sort of reframe how I do that. But early on, Alan, actually the first experience for me was in that job right out of school. After 11 months, I was kind of the top salesperson in the area, and they wound up just giving me one of the franchise stores to run. So at 23, I was managing a $500,000 store and didn't know anything about how to lead other people. They sent me to a one-day leadership training and said, okay, now you're ready to manage this location. Okay. So, you know, so I went in there and had people older than me working for me and some younger reports that I just wasn't sure how best to sort of set the tone, and just realizing how completely void I was of the skill sets, despite having plenty of confidence that I could do it. Turns out the practical application. And ultimately what I found is it's similar skills to just interacting with people at home or my neighbors or my friends. and just having conversations in a way that helped me feel understood. And kind of one of the things I realized early on was it's not just about me feeling understood, but seeking first to understand before being understood. Also one of Stephen Covey's seven habits in there. But yeah, so I really just recognized this ultimately, you know, just conversation, connection, the ways in which we relate to each other. Just like you said, politics is really similar. Like, how can we be authentic when we speak and really find a way to connect with other people without having this? For me, I just had this huge concern about how am I being perceived? Am I coming off? Am I coming off in the way that I want to? Do people think I'm intelligent or articulate or whatever happened to be important to me, rather than a different intention of, am I really showing this person that I care about them and that I'm listening to them and that what they say matters to me, even when sometimes it may not as much as we want it to in those situations. So yeah, I just really started diving into learning about leadership and the different ways in which successful leaders have gone out there and made connections with people. And I think one of the best studies that I've seen is one that Gallup did. So if you've heard of Gallup polling, sure. Gallup research, they polled thousands and thousands, over 10,000 employees at dozens of different companies that they'd worked with, and just asked them to answer, what are the traits that you believe leaders, you want your leaders to have? So someone that you worked for, if you've had a good boss or even know of a colleague, what do you want them to have? And the four terms, after all these 10,000 people was aggregated by Gallup, they said they were trust, compassion, stability, and hope.
These I like it.
Terms. And yeah, trust, compassion, stability, and hope. And when we look around at whatever job we happen to be in, if we're watching, you know, the news a little too often, just sort of the leaders, and just think how much trust do you have in that person? How much compassion are you feeling? Do you feel like this person's being consistent? And, you know, I think of stability as, and if everyone's heard of Brené Brown's work, she does an amazing job sort of bringing leadership and vulnerability together. Really incredible. And she speaks to the way we build in some of these is by these little acts over time, telling someone you appreciate them. You know, just, I think Gabrielle mentioned earlier, holding the door, just those moments of kindness. And for me, it wasn't very altruistic to begin with, I'll be honest. I started doing it because I read that I was supposed to, not because my heart told me, oh, it feels really good. You know, so it's interesting that intention behind these acts that we do, but if we can be consistent with people in our lives over time of just showing these little moments of like, hey, you matter to me. Hey, this is important. I care about you. It's not as much about the big gestures that build this trust, that show compassion. If we just have a little bit of stability and consistency. And it's just, I just kept getting all these lessons now. I just kept learning all these little amazing little things that I could start to do to change how I was relating to people, and eventually got some training in it. So went to coach training. I just wanted to do that. Again, I have a family of psychologists, so figured I'd keep getting that knowledge from them. I wanted to take a slightly different path, and then eventually recognized that teaching mindfulness to me is how it's the way for me that I found is the most effective way for me to increase my capacity to show up a little bit differently, to want to hold the door for someone as opposed to feel like I'm supposed to let someone go in traffic as opposed to just jamming on the bumper in the person in front of me so no one can get in. Just those moments. And how the other piece that I'd love to speak to together is just how almost selfish compassion can be because of the way that we're wired in our biology. So our body actually releases serotonin and oxytocin that makes us feel good and better when we do things for other people. And not that is maybe the best reason to do it, although I'm hoping to get some more oxytocin here, so let me hold this door open. But it does
lining.
Occur.
Yeah.
It happens. So if that's the way to start, and I kind of did start that way, like, all right, I should be doing this, and more now I find myself just wanting to do things for other people and then also getting the benefit of the joy. So it's a little bit of double where, but the single is fine to start with, just that little hit.
And I think that's a great point. And, you know, there are times in which we will do things, acts of kindness, and sometimes the other person will almost respond to us like we're fake. Like, you know, you're not really right. Doing that. And so I love the fact that you're bringing that up. No, we are getting a serotonin hit off of this. It is, it is authentic. It is what we feel good about. And it sounds like you started doing it in the beginning because you read about it. But then once you started feeling it, you're like, no, I really want to do this. So that's great. And if everybody else can kind of take that same approach, you know, to go for it, it would be great. Now, we're going to take a break for just a moment. But so with me is Elena Jo Chatterley. We are talking with Peter Callahan, and our subject is From Surviving to Thriving. And when we come back, Peter, I'd like to know a little bit more about what your particular definition of mindfulness. Stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. We are talking about From Surviving to Thriving, and we're talking about mindfulness. And the question we left off at the break was for Peter. So, Peter, what is your particular definition of mindfulness?
Sure, that's a great question, Alan. There's a lot of ways to define what we call mindfulness. I'll share with you my favorite one. I mean, I think the simplest level is we're paying attention. Attention, being honest with whatever is happening, both internally with ourselves and then externally around us. But I'll give you a little bit longer one that also comes from Mindful Nation UK. The United Kingdom has done a lot around mindfulness and is really bringing it in to politics, to healthcare, to the military, which we are in the United States too. We're just not quite as far along as they are. So the way Mindful Nation defines mindfulness: paying attention to what's happening in the present moment in the mind, body, and external environment with an attitude of curiosity and kindness.
I like it.
So mind, body, and external environment with an attitude of curiosity and kindness. Just paying attention. So they add in a little bit of the value there at the end. And a lot of people will say that as non-judgment is another way to think of it. Now, that to me is a lofty goal. I'll let you know when I achieve non-judgment in my thoughts in every moment.
Yeah,
but I think it's more of an intention, right? Can we notice when we're feeling like we want something to be different than the way it is because we believe that that's right? Someone shouldn't cut me off, so it's okay for me to be angry at them. Well, okay, is that helping them for me in that moment?
Well, and maybe this goes without saying, Peter, but what you're describing to me sounds like slowing down to pay attention, slowing down your thoughts, you know, trying not to react so quickly. Is that an accurate addition to it, just the slowing down piece?
It can be. I think that's probably, for me anyway, I can tell you, Elena, that's the way for me to develop more of that space, so that when I can't control the speed of things happening around me, I have a little bit more space in myself to respond with curiosity and kindness as opposed to judgment. Absolutely. I think things happen really quickly around us, so we can't always slow them down. And that's why the research kind of speaks to finding some way to practice. And I can speak to this, but there's many, many ways to go about practicing. This attention training is another way to describe mindfulness. Right? Think of going to the gym for your brain.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to do it sort of consistently over time. If you want to be strong tomorrow, going to the gym today is not going to do very much, right? You're kind of a little late for tomorrow, but if you really want to be stronger in 3 months or 6 months or a year, you can start a steady regimen and work your way up. And time, and that's really similar to this mindfulness model.
Well, I'm thinking of stop, drop, and roll that we learned in elementary school, right? I mean, when there's not a fire, when you're not in the midst of struggle, you stop, drop, and roll so that when that crisis hits, you know what to do. Is that the idea behind practice?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's also for first responders.
Yeah.
Your police and firemen often say, you know, they get in a situation, people say, you know, you're such a hero, or how'd you stay so calm? They often say, oh, my training kicked in.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Just like you're saying, like that those habits, those patterns. Now, we've honestly learned a lot of these habits and patterns that aren't serving us so well now in life, you know, to get really frustrated with somebody cutting us off. So it takes some retraining to sort of unravel those patterns that we have and come back to a place of a little bit more calm, peacefulness when those situations occur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually when you brought up the idea of retraining, I was actually thinking of something else, but it brought me to, I mean, that is a lot of what Elena does at Heritage, really, is that they're bringing young people in there that have had some training that's kind of gone in the wrong direction. And so for them to come in and to see people that are modeling it in a different way and giving them the tools so that when they go back out to, you know, home or society or whatever, they have the tools to make better choices when those options come up to them. Would that be a pretty good description?
No, exactly. You know, months away practicing in a controlled environment and then slowly introducing back into real environment. Yeah. Most of us, though, like Peter's describing, then we have to figure out how to do that in the midst of real life, you know, like changing the wheels while the car is going.
Yes.
Right. So we all come to those things, honestly. You know, I think of all those wonderful kids who are getting the help in that. Maybe the tough interactions some of us might have out in the world with someone who's got a lot of anger or frustration or just maybe isn't as considerate as we'd want them to be. And another part of leadership is someone's got to be the first one to sort of stop the pattern, absorb maybe some of that energy that we're not loving, and say, hey, I trust that you're doing the best you can based on all the experiences you've had, and I want to be someone who shows you another way of being right now. I'm going to, you know, be kind to you even if you're not to me. I'm going to say thank you even when you don't, you know, do something the way I want to, and just sort of lead by example and show some compassion first and see what happens. It's amazing the responses we get from students and kids we work with when they start to just change a little bit. And it's just, oh, wow, I responded to that bully in this other way, and he was nice to me. You know, he held up my chair the next day or something. It's really cool to hear that happen.
Yeah, and, you know, it's conversations like this that make me feel so optimistic about the future. And I know that, you know, there's a lot of media out there that wants to push doom and gloom all the time. But when you're around people like I am, like the conversation we're having, or around young people and seeing them grow in such a positive way, it makes me feel optimistic. And I think that's the message that should be out there more, you know, the message that media should be putting out there, and the message that fortunately you're putting out there, you know, is we can be optimistic about this because we can see the changes and we can see how positive it is. So, but the question that I had that I was thinking about earlier has to do with when you were talking about different practices and stuff. I think we are in a time in which we don't think we have the time. You know, there's mm-hmm. there's this constant rush, and I'll talk to people about maybe some of the mindfulness practices that I do, and right away they go, well, yeah, but, you know, you must be getting close to retirement because I don't have time to do that stuff because I have to do this, and I have to do this, and I have to do this, and so on. So, I mean, how do we make time for these new practices when we believe that we're already overscheduled?
And I just want to start by acknowledging each of our, you know, busyness. Like it's okay to feel stress and anxiety. Obviously, we don't want to. We don't want to do that. But one of the first challenges I think we often have to doing anything new or different is just sort of accepting the scarcity that we have and that we're the victims of our own schedules. And it's okay to feel overwhelmed and overbooked and to start by just acknowledging, like, okay, this is kind of what society expects of me, or just it's where I am right now. And this is a big piece of this mindfulness, just honesty with what is currently happening, allowing this to be what it is. And like, all right, so from here, what might I want to do differently? And I think that's one of the first steps, Ellen, is acknowledging, like, I am willing to, like, I want something to be different. Because mm-hmm. if you're sort of passively accepting what's going on and don't want to change, you're not going to. So that's okay too. Just kind of being honest with ourselves. Like,
Well, if you do what you've always done.
I don't think I'm going to do anything different right now.
You get, I was going to say, if you do what you've always done, you'll get what you've always gotten.
Yep. Definitely.
Exactly. And then there's the Henry Ford, right? If you think you can or you think you can't, you're right.
Yep.
So, I mean, the research has actually shown sort of that people have experienced some pretty significant changes just by taking a couple of minutes a day to start. So, and this is coming back to that sort of stability, consistency idea of, sure, maybe you're able to find 15 or 20 minutes to try out one of these mindfulness practices on the weekend. But honestly, if you're able to really carve out 1 or 2 minutes every morning for a few weeks in a row, that it is much more likely to have a sustained benefit on you. So coming back to the gym analogy, mm-hmm. right? If you're working out at least a little bit every day versus once a week, that little bit tends to have some more positive benefits and can certainly set you up better to increase that amount of practice.
And
make it regular. So I think that's the first step, is just a couple minutes.
Yeah. Peter, where do you have suggestions for what to do for that couple of minutes or a direction where people could look?
I would sense that's kind of helpful to share and maybe...
Well, yeah, some of us are new to this.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Absolutely. And there's so many practices we can do. That's one of the things I love, too. Mindfulness is kind of this big umbrella under which you could even, you know, in one way you could put yoga and meditation and all these other practices underneath there. There's many ways to split it up. But again, if we simply come back to this idea of training our attention, right, really exercising this focus muscle in our brains, the only thing we need to do is to choose one, I don't know how to define it broadly, but one specific area to put our focus on and continue to come back to that. So the breath is the most common that you hear about, right? So it's really put attention on your breath. And then the next key is really to notice that your mind wanders off. And sometimes you notice this right away, often takes me a couple minutes before I recognize, like, oh, I'm not thinking about my breath anymore. But so if we just start at the simple, just paying attention as you inhale, and then noticing yourself exhale. One really simple way to do it. And then, oh, yep, thinking about lunch right now. Okay, what am I going to have for lunch? What's coming up? I don't know. Dan Harris has a funny one. He says, where did gerbils run wild? Oh, my mind's wandering. And this is the key. The real key is this moment. We are all human. Our brains are made to think and wander. It's okay. So just accepting, acknowledging, like, okay, my mind is wandering, noticing that, and gently bringing yourself back to your breath. That is all we're doing, is noticing, like, oh, okay, I'm wandering, back to the breath. Each time you do that, you've succeeded. It's a little victory. Like, oh, great, another repetition, right? I've done one more rep here. So, all right, great.
Well, how interesting that then you're self-accepting. Sorry to interrupt you, but you know, that self-acceptance, because you're describing practicing and so much of, you know, recovering from being a jerk, putting up with people, putting you down, all those sorts of things is about a healthy confidence. And if you practice accepting that your mind wanders, accepting that you're not in control all the time, I absolutely see how that could build up over time to what you're describing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's hard. I mean, it's easy to speak to right now, but it's been really hard for me to... I spent a good part of the first couple of years of my practice probably beating myself up pretty well. Every time I'd notice that I wasn't thinking about my breath anymore. Oh, God, I gotta be better. I need to focus more.
Yeah.
I'm wasting my time. And now I just notice that, oh, thank you, brain. Yes, you. Thanks for doing what you do. That's great. I'm going to come back over here to my breath now, but I appreciate it. And just the difference that makes, just the usefulness. I think that, like you're saying, that's part of the practice.
Mm-hmm.
So the breath is just one of about 100, maybe 10,000 ways to do it. So let me just list a few others.
Okay.
You could do. So breath is one. Another is, some people really like, is listening. So finding some sort of, some tone, probably not words, right? We wouldn't want somebody singing, but there's all sorts of audio tones and music, and each one of the apps out there is going to have this option on there as well. So and there's tons out there. I started with an app called Headspace, which is really great. I've got a good friend who's got some courses on Simple Habit is another one. And we have all these listed up on the Copper Beach website as well. So I'm happy to share those resources with you. But having an app to sort of guide you to get started, I think is another key way to do it. I mean, you can look on YouTube as well, just search guided meditation. But so sound, another one, especially for the workplace, to do a lot of teaching in the workplace, that people really like, especially when they say, well, I just don't have 2 minutes, 5 minutes in the morning, so forget it, it's not going to happen. All right, well, maybe you can take that time at lunch. Another way to do it is actually just instead of your breath or sound, to focus on a body sensation. So it can be just like feeling yourself pressing down against the chair and just seeing if you can notice heat or weight or tingling, any sensation going on. And that's like bringing ourselves back down to our body. Because that was one piece for me. As a jerk, I found myself in my head all the time and very disconnected from what was going on from my neck down. So finding a physical sensation. And then one great one is actually just walking to the bathroom. So as you get up from your chair, your desk, as you start to walk to the bathroom, just paying attention to the feeling of each foot pressing against the floor. I actually just met with a group of nurses recently at a big hospital here in Mountain, Connecticut. And I got an email from sort of the head of the whole nursing at the hospital after the meeting, where we didn't even teach mindfulness yet, just talking about bringing it into to the oncology nurses. And she said, yeah, so I've been trying that mindful walking thing just in between patient rooms. She's like, so instead of thinking about, you know, the future or the past or letting my mind wander, she's like, I'm just bringing my attention to the feeling of my feet as I walk to the next room. And she said, I've been showing up in each room with my patients and with all of the other nurses so much more calmly. Like, I feel like I'm just there, know what I'm going to talk about. And, you know, it's just these tiny moments, just little moments of practice that have really helped her out. Right. So really, you can choose anything. You can choose the bottom of your feet. You can choose your chair. So it can be anything.
Well, Peter, first of all, thank you so much. And again, I just want to acknowledge what you're doing out there. I think it's beneficial to all of us. Now, the website that I think you mentioned for everybody out there, I think it's, is it copperbeachinstitute.org/staff?
.org is fine. Yeah, you'll find it all. Copperbeachinstitute.org.
Okay.
We'll get you there.
Okay. So is there any other way that they can get in touch or that you would like if anybody wants more information?
All our info is on there. You can see me right on our staff page.
Perfect.
We do a lot of work in the vulnerable communities as well, kind of what Elena was talking about. We've got all different types of work we're doing around the country.
Well, again, thank you so much. And if you were driving out there, we will have all this information on the website. Don't try to write this down. You can go to answersforthefamily.com and get all the information on Copper Beach Institute and on Peter Callahan. Peter, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me and for having these conversations. It's so important.
Well, and anytime, if anything that you come up with that you want to help get the word out, just let us know. We would love to have you back anytime.
All right, you got it. Thanks so much, Alan. Thank you, Elena.
Okay, thank you.
All right, and for everybody out there, I want to share with you a local event that's coming up. This is the Mental Health Awareness Month kickoff. Okay, it'll take place Tuesday, May 7th, this is 2019, from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Discovery Cube, which is just down the street in Santa Ana. It's at 2500 North Main Street. You can get all this information. I'll put it up on our site as well. But you can join us because we're going to celebrate Mental Health Awareness Month, okay, by recommitting our community to increase awareness and understanding of mental health and the steps we can take to protect our own mental health and the need for appropriate and accessible services for all people. And again, this event is free. It's open to all community members, friends, professionals, family members. You can go. Let's see. I'm trying to think of the best way. You can go to Eventbrite would be the best way. So if you go to eventbrite.com, put in Mental Health Awareness Kickoff, you'll be able to see the tickets. It will be a wonderful time. You will gain a lot of good information. Please be sure to put us on your calendar next Monday. That will be joined by Claudette Raleigh to discuss cultural brilliance. It's the DNA of organizational excellence. So, Elena, you should probably come back for that one, too, because I know that that's one of your specialties. And for everybody out there, if you can visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com, share it with someone that you love. Put it out there on your own social media. We're all trying to just spread the word of great things that we can do for everybody. Elena, thank you so much for being with us.
So happy to be here.
All right. So for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.